This is Money Talk.
Our money is your money. We print it for you to use.
America's most trusted advisor on money matters for 25 years. Now, Bob Brinker.
And Bob Brinker is taking a well-deserved day off. I'm honored once again to be sitting in for him. My name is Tom Bakar. I'm a journalist and a guy that's covered these beats for a long, long time. I certainly don't pretend to have the knowledge of individual financial instruments that Bob does. Bob has made many people very secure in their retirements because of the advice that he has given. But we can talk about some of the bigger picture stuff with some folks that look at the big picture all the time. And this hour, we are joined by Terry Conley, who is the former dean of the Golden Gate University School of Business. He is a former Wall Street investment banker and attorney. He now assists nonprofits and has a lot of other projects going. And I want to welcome Terry Conley to the show. Terry, thank you for joining us.
Tom, it's great to be here.
Now, the number to call if you want to chime in on this conversation for the next hour is 1-800-934-2221. Again, 1-800-934-2221. It's more fun when you call in, and Terry and I are going to kick this thing off, but I'm really counting on you guys to bring some subjects, and Terry can respond to them because he has vast, vast knowledge of all this. And I guess my first question to you, Terry, is that one of the things that's talked about a lot, and I'm somewhat loath to get into this because it has political tinges to it and being in the presidential election season. But one of the things that a lot of people have complained about is that the economy has grown at a rate that is very, very slow compared to other recessions that we have had. What is it about the recession that we just had, or if anything, that makes the recovery of the U.S. economy as slow as it has been compared to other recessions where it has rebounded a lot quicker?
Well, I think one word for it would be depth, in the sense that most of the other recessions folks talk about, say between the Great Depression and what we now call the Great Recession there in 2007-8, most of those recessions involve the U.S. GDP going negative anywhere from 1 to 4%. What we had was this, just imagine for a minute that your baseline of economic GDP production, whatever you want to call it, is 100. And, you know, historically we say the average is 3% above that. In other words, we're growing on an annual basis that 100 baseline up, say, 103. Mm-hmm. In the Great Recession, we didn't just drop down back to 96, we dropped down to 93. So whenever you're thinking about, you know, how long it takes you and how much progress you're making getting out of a hole, first thing you do is measure the hole. And we went from an economy that was bumping along around 3% to a GDP growth to one that went down almost 7%. You know, remember we had 700,000-800,000 people being, you know, losing their jobs every month in the depth of that recession. So being back to 2% is actually a climb of 9 points. And if we had a typical recession, say a 3% recession, we'd be looking at a 6% growth rate, which, frankly, in our type of mature economy isn't likely. I mean, China is forecasting maybe 6 to 7%, you know, and they're growing from, you know, just beginning to grow their middle class. So
Really
need to look at that number, whether it's political or not political. It's really about arithmetic. Mm-hmm. And I think that the fact that we've been having this sort of steady 2%, what people call ho-hum growth, we need to look at the fact that at least for the last 8 years, we haven't had a recession start. And going 8 years without a recession starting, we've ended one, but we haven't started any, raises a question of, are we better off? And maybe some viewers would have, or listeners would have a view on this. Are we better off if you say, give me an economy that grows for 2% forever, just like now, but I guarantee you, you won't have a recession. Would we take that deal?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. When we had the dot-com bust back in 2000, that era back then, there was a terrible loss. You know, people were, you know, putting money, crazy money, against this thing, and the NASDAQ climbed to 5,000 and all that stuff. And then when it went bust, it went bust. But as I recall, pretty much the rest of the country and the rest of the world was okay. This time
it was,
around,
it was a more contained, but it was a bust that hit, let's say, the 401k world and the stock market world a lot harder. What happened in the dot-com bust is that $7 trillion of paper wealth disappeared from the face of the earth, and that was basically in stock market value of companies like Cisco and Amazon and a whole bunch of folks that didn't survive. And we got what Greenspan and others, you know, involved did was lower interest rates to a point where housing became fairly inexpensive. And we created about $4.5 trillion of that lost $7 trillion in housing market wealth to sort of balance off that loss. And it was just recently that NASDAQ, which was a 5,000-figure stock index back then, it was only now, 15 years later, that we've recovered that level of value of the NASDAQ. So a lot of that hit was isolated, let's say, or focused on, you know, paper wealth generated by stock appreciation. The housing appreciation then bled in, or depreciation bled into the whole financial system, and there was no way to isolate it. So the question is it a Zika virus in Florida, which was the sort of the dot-com crash, or is it a pandemic? So we had a financial pandemic in the Great Recession of 2007 and 2008 because it affected everybody because it went to the heart of the money system.
And it was worldwide. It wasn't just confined to the situation where it was Silicon Valley primarily. I mean, this was a worldwide recession, was it not?
Right. And again, that's because the financial markets have been globalized to such an extent that it's very hard to contain them. Ben Bernanke did a lot of good things in terms of helping dig us out of that tailspin. And, you know, there's a movie about a pilot saving a plane from crashing by flying it upside down. And certainly the Federal Reserve turned standard economics upside down to try to get us out of that tailspin. To some degree it worked. To some degree it's caused other problems. But, you know, one of the mistakes he made early on was saying, we think we've got the subprime mortgage crisis contained. And I think all economists and all central banking officials have learned the fact now that with the globalization of finance, you can't put that toothpaste back in a tube. It's very hard to contain something that goes to the heart of the financial system. So various countries and various congresses and parliaments have taken steps to try to make sure that whenever we have things go wrong in the financial world again, that there is a way to contain them in some way so that they don't spread from bank to bank and from country to country and from central bank to central bank. I haven't figured that all out yet well enough, but at least for the time being, as I said, we haven't had a recession start up since 2007.
What about these rating agencies? They put a lot of baloney out during that period of time about these mortgage-backed securities. Have they cleaned up their act, or are you concerned about what they're doing these days?
Well, I think the mortgage-backed securities market itself has more cleaned up its act by, if you will, narrowing its act. But you do have some exotic securities coming back into the markets, but they're largely out of the view and out of the area of that sort of broad engagement of pension funds and so forth. And county governments and so forth that invested in some of these mortgage-backed securities without really knowing what they were made of. As far as the rating agencies are concerned, there are some restraints on them now. And, you know, some of them have tried to defend themselves by saying, you know, using the First Amendment, you know, say anything we want. But the fact is they perform a valuable function in the market, and they have suffered probably more in terms of reputation than they have financially. But that reputation hurts, and I think they have taken steps to be more transparent and more clear about their ratings. But frankly, they haven't had that much to rate lately in terms of public paper in the securitized market. But, you know, these are the questions of, you know, why we've resorted to Dodd-Frank laws and so forth to try to restrict the ability of at least federally insured financial institutions and some others that are deemed significant enough to kind of wreck the whole economy, to restrict mm-hmm. them from using, in effect, other people's money, of which they are the users and custodians, restrict putting that kind of money into highly risky investments.
You are listening to Terry Connolly, the former dean of the Golden Gate University School of Business, former Wall Street investment banker and attorney, now assisting nonprofits out on the West Coast and other parts of the country. My name is Tom Bakar. I'm sitting in for Bob Brinker, who's taking the day off, and we are going to continue. If you'd like to get involved in this conversation, talk about these or other issues that deal with finance and with business, you got the right guy. 1-800-934-2221. That number again, 1-800-934-2221. We encourage you to call in. My name's Tom Bakar, and this is Money Talk.
Money Talk.
This is Charles Osgood. Go down the pain relief aisle, and you'll see a lot of different pain relievers. But have you tried Salonpas Deep Relieving Gel? It is fast-melting, quick-absorbing, penetrating deep relief. Perfect for sore muscles or joints. Salonpas Deep Relieving Gel has three powerful active ingredients that work for up to 8 full hours. In fact, nothing else you can buy is proven stronger or more effective against pain. Look for the tall blue box next to the Salonpas patches. Salonpas Deep Relieving Gel.
How strong is Allegra D?
It's my congestion's out of my way strong. Even in the park, playing with my dogs. Go fetch, Bosley.
Allegra D, a fast, non-drowsy antihistamine, plus a powerful decongestant that starts relieving your toughest allergy symptoms in under 1 hour.
Allegra D is breathing free for 24 hours strong, even in the convertible.
Allegra D, strong relief for your allergy symptoms. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com. Use only as directed.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
The standard run-of-the-mill tests and treatments.
Cortisone.
Antihistamine.
Multiple creams. Antibiotic spray.
Multiple prescriptions.
Steroid injections.
Topical sprays.
The sharp antibiotics.
Steroid cream.
No results.
It was neglect. The other owners didn't care enough about him to take care of him and to give him the nutrition he needed.
A nutritional supplement like Dynavite.
To be the healthy, happy dog he is today.
Dinovite.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Put some nutrition in your dog. The vet that I trust recommended Dynavite. The dog I have today, because of Dynavite, has a sparkle in his eye, a lush coat, healthy skin.
When you rescue a dog, you've got to feed them right for life.
Dynavite will make your dog a happy dog.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dinovite.com.
Previously on The Drive Home.
Steve-O, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me. What a pleasure to be here.
You don't drink or anything, and
right.
You're sober. How many years?
8 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Could you have done that job sober?
I did. Our last Jackass movie, I was clean and sober. And I don't think that I ever really did stunts because I was under the influence. I just did them because I'm an attention whore.
Yeah. No, wait, not even the stapling of the nutsack?
I was... I've stapled my nuts since I got sober.
Okay. Well, congratulations to that.
Thanks, yeah.
The Drive Home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips.
Weekdays 3 to 6.
On Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hey, it's Jillian, and I want to tell you guys about Northwest Rugs and Furniture. Did you know they've been locally owned for 24 years? They've got the largest selection of rugs on the West Coast, and they pride themselves on having quality rugs and furniture at affordable prices. I should know, I bought a rug about 10 years ago that I still have in my dining room. Northwest Rugs and Furniture has a diverse selection of dining room, bedroom, and living room furniture. There's a huge sale going on right now with 25% off and lowest prices of the season on rugs. Make sure to visit their new store in Sherman Oaks and visit nwrugs.com.
Hi, I'm Sonny Reynolds, COO, founder of As Is Lending. BBB knows that we pride ourselves on providing our clients with the right loan product to meet their financial needs. Earning an A-plus rating from BBB shows that consumers can trust us to assist them on their path to financial freedom. And we strive to deliver exceptional customer care by listening to our clients' specific goals. Our BBB accreditation puts us on a short list of mortgage lenders BBB has verified. As Is Lending invites you to check our reviews at BBB.org and our website at asislending.com.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC. This is Money Talk.
I'm Bay Carr sitting in for Bob Brinker. I'm joined by Terry Conley, the former dean of the Golden Gate University School of Business, also a former Wall Street investment banker and attorney. And earlier in the previous hour, Terry, we were talking about Social Security, and we still get some calls on that, and I know you've looked at this. Let's talk to Rich in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Rich, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Rich. I'm 64 years old. I'm going to be turning 66 in January of 2018, and that's when I plan on retiring. Mm-hmm. I've got two pensions that'll total about $50,000. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have about $80,000 in retirement, and I'm trying to decide if it's best to start taking Social Security when I hit 66 or put that off till I hit 70 and start drawing out of my savings to make it till I hit 70 and then start taking Social Security. And I'm wondering if there's any tax advantages to doing one or the other.
Terry, what do you think about that? When should people take Social Security? Fascinating question.
Well, I had to make that decision myself, and the honest answer is it sort of cuts many ways, and it very much depends on the individual situations. How it works out arithmetically, just on the Social Security aspect, really comes down to how long you're going to live. Nobody generally knows that. So there are points in time you can calculate that, hey, if I take it at 69 and I live to 77, then I win. But if I live to 73, I lose, and so forth. Those kind of numbers can be worked out with a financial analyst. But I think from a tax point of view, on the second part of the question, it really depends on whether you have other salaried taxable income. The Social Security is not going to be taxed unless unless you have, you're really not going to have a tax issue about the Social Security unless you have substantial income either from capital gains or continued working. Because you can, of course, do that after you're at 66, et cetera, and still take your Social Security.
Mm-hmm. But the question being, though, that if you are, let's say, making enough money where your Social Security can be taxed and you don't absolutely need the money, the Social Security money, are you not better off just to wait?
If your expense profile is such that say for the caller you have a $50,000 income that you have in place already without Social Security based on other pensions, then it does tip the scale toward waiting for Social Security so that you are getting larger amounts of Social Security as indeed your needs for that fund may increase as you get older into your 70s.
Mm-hmm. And so, of course, if you do wait, you get more money.
Pardon?
If you do wait, you get more money.
Right. That's correct, because it's calculated based on your life expectancy.
Now, it's interesting because so many people that collect Social Security, I mean, that's a nice problem to have, but for many people who collect Social Security, that's it, meaning that's the money they have, and in many cases, that's all the money they have. And it looks like, at least from the numbers I read earlier, 74% of the people getting Social Security are retired people. About 10% are dependents, and about the balance is people that have disabilities. We are not really good in this country at preparing for the future, are we?
No, we're not. Not to say most other countries are. And if you look at Japan or some other developed countries, we may actually look better than some because of that Social Security system. But we really are, as a nation, underprepared for it. And that fact is emphasized by how many people today are no longer in the workforce. We focus on this number in the political campaigns, otherwise 94 million no longer in the workforce. Well, that includes everybody who's retired and everybody who's going to college that are not working while they're in college. Mm-hmm. And the number of retirees and the number of folks going to colleges are both growing. So the workforce participation is down as a result of that. So it does mean more dependency for more people on Social Security, and at $20,000 a year or such, you're living close to the poverty line.
Well, and the other thing is that many people, I think I read, and I did this story not too long ago, but I think I read that something like 30% of the people in the United States, 30%, do not have enough money to come up with any emergency money whatsoever, not dollar one.
Yes, that's polled recently, and that's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty scary proposition, is it not?
Well, it's a large percentage of the population that lives from paycheck to paycheck, and then when there is no paycheck, what are they living on? And, you know, it's a combination of various forms of assistance, whether it's food stamps or disability or unemployment benefits or the like. And in the daily portrayals of life in America, those sort of people become invisible statistics, but they have a very real effect in the economy as a whole, and they have a very, very real political effect.
You're listening to Terry Conley, who is the former dean of the Golden Gate University School of Business and former Wall Street investment banker and attorney, and does a lot of work with nonprofits. We are going to come back, and I see we have some more questions about retirement and Social Security, so we will try to address those. My name is Tom Bakar. I am sitting in for Bob Brinker, who's taking the day off, and he will be back next week. But until then, I will continue to host with Terry, and we will be back shortly. This is Money Talk.
This is Money Talk.
When you're investing, you always try your best, but sometimes you make mistakes, and that's okay because you can get better. And the same goes for your credit. By enrolling in Experian Credit Works, you get all the tools and personal support you need to help you understand and manage your credit. Because credit isn't just a score, it's a skill. So start your trial today at Experian.com and be better at credit at Experian.com.
I have to get to sleep.
Tom had a stressful day, and now he can't shut down at bedtime.
Need sleep.
To fall asleep fast, millions of people turn to Unisom sleep gels. They're non-habit forming and quickly help you sleep soundly so you wake recharged. Tom? Unisom sleep gels. A stressful day deserves a restful night. Use as directed. Active ingredient diphenhydramine hydrochloride.
Get clarity on the things that make you go. Live and local, KABC.
Police at JFK Airport in New York City say they haven't found any firearms, rounds of ammunition, or other evidence of gunfire in the terminal. Terminal 8 was evacuated as a precaution after reports of shots fired near the departures area Sunday night. There are also reports of shots fired in a second night of demonstrations in Milwaukee following a deadly police shooting of an African-American man by a black police officer. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett.
This is a serious situation, and this is a neighborhood that has unfortunately been affected by violence in the recent past. I know this neighborhood very, very well.
Police say one shooting victim has been rescued and rushed to the hospital. Well, thousands of people have been rescued from record flooding in Louisiana, and the death toll there has risen to 5. Governor John Bel Edwards.
If you are advised to evacuate, please do that. Again, just because your home has never taken on water doesn't mean that it won't.
Water's expected to rise 3 feet or more. I'm Elliot Francis.
Ah, the sounds of summer. And this is the sound of summer skin being scratched because of the itching and irritation of what the season can bring. You need the fast relief of Cortisone 10 Intensive Healing Anti-Itch Cream. Unlike regular lotions, Cortisone 10 relieves itch and irritation with 1% hydrocortisone, the strongest non-prescription itch medicine, plus 7 healing moisturizers. Cortisone 10 makes summer sound fun again. Cortisone 10. Feel the heal. Use as directed.
Any Joe Schmo knows GEICO will work to save you money on car insurance. But since money talks, why not just ask the savings?
That's me, Joe Savings. I'm not literally $1 million, but I feel like it. Why? Because when Joe switched his car insurance at GEICO.com, his monthly rate went down and the savings went up. Now he uses the handy GEICO mobile app anytime to check out his policy perks. Talk about a win-win and 2 thumbs up. Man, I wish I had thumbs.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Rethink Kitchen and Bath event is going on now at the Home Depot, with great new ideas for the busiest rooms in the house, like the beautiful and beautifully durable Kohler Misto single-handle kitchen faucet. It's at a new lower price of just $119. Its durable stainless finish withstands the toughest daily use by twice the industry standards. Right now, no one offers more Kohler for your kitchen and bath than the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only, valid through October 1st.
How strong is Allegra D?
It's my congestion's out of my way strong. Even in the park, playing with my dogs. Go fetch, Bosley.
Allegra D, a fast, non-drowsy antihistamine, plus a powerful decongestant that starts relieving your toughest allergy symptoms in under 1 hour.
Allegra D is breathing free for 24 hours strong, even in the convertible.
Allegra D, strong relief for your allergy symptoms. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com. Use only as directed.
GEICO presents Kathy, the Candid Real Estate Agent.
As you can see, this apartment has crown molding, and yes, that's a working fireplace. Can't you see yourself curling up with a good book? At least until a pipe bursts, and then you'll need to replace your brand new upholstered sofa. That thing will soak up water like a sponge.
It's hard to know all that comes with renting a home or apartment. That's why the GEICO Insurance Agency makes getting covered for personal property loss and damage quick and easy. Visit GEICO.com and see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
GEICO applauds your inner ride leader.
An enthusiastic engine rev goes out to the biker in you who leads the pack. Even if that pack is a party of one, you're still a leader to GEICO. To prove it, GEICO will insure your motorcycle with great rates and 24/7 customer service. And with GEICO by your side, you're never cruising solo, which means you've just been nominated as a real ride leader. Congrats. The smell of fine leather and trailblazing is in your future.
GEICO Motorcycle. See how much you could save.
This is Money Talk.
Tom Bakar sitting in for Bob Brinker, who's taking the day off. With me, Terry Conley, former dean of the Golden Gate University School of Business, former Wall Street banker and attorney and all of that stuff, and a guy who really knows a lot of things about anything having to do with business and investments. But I have an interesting question from John in Arlington, Massachusetts. John, go ahead.
Hi, Tom. Nice to speak with you and Mr. Conley. I'm a retired actuary. So I went to actuary.org, the website for the American Academy of Actuaries, and there I played the Social Security game, which allows me to evaluate different proposal policy changes to fix the Social Security funding problem.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I did a few things like increasing the full retirement age to 68 gradually, and that solved 16% of it, reducing cost of living adjustments by 0.3%, which I think might be close to where the chain CPI that the president proposed, that would fix 21% of it. That's where you'd buy lower cost. When apples are cheaper than pears, you buy apples and vice versa. Yeah. Raising the payroll tax to 6.6 from 6, 6.6 from 6.2 would solve 28% of the problem. And if we raised limit on income where taxes applied, but increased the benefits, not eliminated, but raised it, that would solve 29% of it. So those four adjustments wouldn't cut benefits for anybody, and they would solve the whole funding by themselves. There's other options that you can evaluate on there. You, your listeners, might like to try it. Actuary.org, Social Security gain.
Very good. Well, thank you for your call. We appreciate it very much. Terry, what about that? You know, there are a lot of proposals to fix Social Security, whatever fixing it means. But the point is, it seems like the big problem there is getting it through the Congress, because none of this is going to happen without congressional approval.
Well, the big one of the other big problems that changes would not address is that we simply don't have enough workers paying into the system, and we're increasing the number of beneficiaries with retirements and so forth. So it's interesting, but if you could get a coalition politically that would say, well, you got 29% of Congress would agree to sign on to the 29% adjustment that it would make if we did say one of those things that our good caller just mentioned, and then also you had some regularization of the immigration status of people, where you had more people paying into Social Security accounts because they are working in the economy, but they're working in the underground economy. That would actually help too, and it wouldn't hurt anybody who's currently either paying in or taking out of Social Security. So there are some arguments that bring together the Social Security issue with the immigration issue.
Let's do this.
See, if we ever got a Congress that would work together, those two things could be brought together in ways that would be mutually beneficial. But
absolutely.
All those ideas are on the table that our caller just mentioned. They're very and those numbers are certainly within the ballpark of what's reasonable.
Okay, well, let's add one more to that. Let's talk to Diana in Utica, New York. Diana, you want to raise one more issue about all of this?
Yes, I'm very political, and I care very much about the politicians and the politics discussing our economy. And I wanted to know what would happen if we increase the tax on the rich, being the rich defined as multimillionaires, by 0.1%, and then turn that into a tax break for the middle and poor classes.
Go ahead, Terry. Well, how would you respond to that?
Well, we would probably increase economic growth above 2% in the real world, because if the money flowed the way that design suggests, we'd probably have more spent on goods and services by the folks in the lower economic groupings. Being able to spend more money and drive more employment and so forth. One of the issues with respect to, you know, the top income end is not just increasing the rate, but increasing the ability to collect that rate with respect to all the deductions that are available. But history shows, studies have been done that when you have a tax break at the upper end, it tends to go into investment, which is all well and good, but it isn't necessarily spent in the same way as a good tax break for the middle and lower income groups is, in terms of direct impact on the economy in the short term. That's why when you have stimulus packages, you usually have sort of like a payroll tax holiday, because that money doesn't go in the bank. It goes to the grocery store usually.
Okay, well, let's change gears here for a second. We got a call from Judy in San Francisco. Judy, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to ask you something. You know, on Friday, I called Vanguard for my own account, and they told me that my money market now is not going to be Vanguard money market, but will be Federal money market, but Vanguard is still going to hold it. The only thing is, I just want to know why would the switch from, or does it have anything to do with anything? I don't know. When I asked the question, they mentioned so many things I couldn't make sense of it, and they were very busy, so I just left it alone. And I just wanted to know what is the problem. I mean, I don't know if it's a problem or the switching name has anything to do with something.
All right, Terry, the question is, thank you for your call.
Yeah, not holding that fund myself, I'm not absolutely sure, but I suspect strongly it has to do with the new federal rules applying to money market funds. One of the worst things that happened in the Great Recession was that many money market funds were unable to keep their asset value at a dollar a share, if you will, and some money market funds went under because they had not taken advantage of really loose rules and invested in some products that were not appropriate for money market funds. And so when the financial collapse hit, money market funds couldn't pay you back dollar for dollar if you had put money in them. Now, with some new regulations, they're designed to make sure that the money market will always have enough in reserve and will always be invested in a way that if you redeem and you want your money back, you will get your money back, because they're not the same as insured accounts in the federal deposit insurance system in a bank. They're good investments, but they're only good investments for their purpose if they're not running around investing in things that would mean you can't get your money out when you need it.
And I suspect that's very good.
The change there is with Vanguard. Yeah.
Excellent. That's fine. Let's go to Michael in Joliet, Illinois. He has a very interesting question. Go ahead, Michael.
Hello. Yeah, I've actually got two about Social Security. The first one is my daughter, she has my two grandkids. The father of the two kids is tall. He signed the birth certificate. He is their father. Right now he's incarcerated. Is she entitled to some Social Security over that? It's, I keep hearing that, but,
you know something on that. I honestly don't know. I'll try to get an answer for you before the end of the program.
Well, let me tell you, I think I have got it here.
Maybe
it says,
if you receive,
it says if you receive Social Security, your benefits will be suspended if you're convicted of a criminal offense and sent to jail or prison for more than 30 continuous days. Your benefits can be reinstated starting with the month following the month of your release. Although you cannot receive monthly Social Security benefits while you're incarcerated, benefits to your spouse or children will continue as long as they remain eligible. Key word there is they must be eligible. If they're eligible for it, they can have those benefits. If not, they cannot. And that's kind of the simple answer, but it's one of those things that is a sad reality for a lot of people with so many people that we have in jail. Let us now go to Southwest Kansas and Steve. Steve, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Are you hearing me?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, sir.
Well, I just have a comment. You've mentioned several times that if Congress could get together, both Republicans and Democrats, to do something, then a lot of things would be solved with Social Security. I'd say if the American people would get together, pass an amendment to limit their terms of their office and force them to also take Social Security as retirement instead of receiving the elite retirement of a full pension in what they're making currently, they would all begin to perk up and look into it, because it's beginning to affect their own pocketbooks instead of just someone else's. That's all I had. Just wanted to comment that it's more than the two of them get together. You got to make it be personal with them.
I'm with you on that.
Fair enough.
On both counts. Presidents have term limits, and at least in general terms, I have no issue with the idea of Congress having term limits as well. We have them here in California.
Let us go
in our legislature. Yeah.
That's right. Let us go to Jack in Chicago, who has an interesting question. Go ahead, Jack.
Hi. My question concerns the Obama administration's policies. Over the years, he inherited the Great Recession, and then he bailed out the banks and GM and so on, and then he had a small stimulus package that got through Congress, and then there was nothing, you know, because famously Mitch McConnell said he was going to make sure Obama did not succeed in anything. And do you think over the years if Obama would have been able to have a stimulus package, something like infrastructure and so on, would our economy be in better shape, and would his presidency be seen as more successful?
Right. I'll make two points on that. One is that take infrastructure. It's interesting right now. Both presidential candidates say they're for spending on it. They may have different plans on it. If you polled the Republicans and Democrats in Congress, you'd probably find that most of them are for it. But, you know, what ties Congress up in knots is either you get a small group that just says no and holds things up, or you say, look, I'm not going to vote for this for you guys unless you vote for this for my guys and so forth. And it's just it devolves into a game. And you're right. After his first 2 years, Obama lost his congressional majority in both houses. He only had a supermajority in the Senate for 2 years. It's an interesting fact about recessions that, you know, Obama has not had a recession start during his term. And since the start of the 20th century, there are only four presidential terms that have not had a recession start during their term: Obama, Clinton, Carter, and the combined JFK-LBJ. Those are the only four presidents since the year 1899, that have not had a recession begin during their administration. So, in one sense, we're two quarters away from Obama having that success. And most of the predictions right now are that the third quarter GDP here is going to be somewhere between 2.5% and 3.5%. And that will be quite an accomplishment considering where we came from, whether that's in political terms or otherwise. But that's just a fact of how recessions have come and gone in the American economy.
Okay, what we are going to do is we're going to take a break. We'll come back to take a few more questions. I'm with Terry Connolly, the former dean of the Golden Gate University School of Business. My name is Tom Bakar, sitting in for Bob Brinker, who will return next week. And this is Money Talk.
Money Talk.
I'm business analyst Jill Schlesinger with a small business success story sponsored by the U.S. Postal Service. 1-800-PETMEDS is America's largest pet pharmacy, delivering medications to millions of customers. Marketing director Vanessa Penigo says summer is an important time of the year for ensuring that pet owners have the medications they need to protect their pets from heartworm, fleas, and ticks. We rely on the USPS to ensure that those medications arrive in order to prevent disease and keep pets healthy. Vanessa knows that when you rely on the U.S. Postal Service, your business becomes their business. The U.S. Postal Service. Priority you.
Why should you trust in the U.S. Postal Service to deliver for your business? Because when you ship with us, your business becomes our business. Whether you have 3 employees or 300, you'll have a nationwide fleet of delivery trucks working for you. We make more e-commerce deliveries to homes than anyone else in the country. See what we can do for you at usps.com/4business. The United States Postal Service. Priority, you.
You go to the dentist and find out you need a root canal or a periodontist, and that means another appointment with another doctor at another location, maybe in a couple of days or weeks. Well, now there's a much easier and affordable way. Dr. Messer Khani has put together a team of experts at LA Dentists Group, a collaborative dentistry practice, the newest field of dentistry, that provides a prosthodontist, periodontist, orthodontist, general cosmetic and sedation dentist, medical doctor, and anesthesiologist all under one roof. For anxious patients, they do safe sedation. They do implants, full mouth restoration, teeth straightening, smile makeovers with porcelain veneers and crowns, all under one roof. LA Dentist Group utilizes a 3D imaging scanner, so they can save you time by pre-planning treatments. They even have their own lab to personally supervise your final restoration. To schedule your appointment with Dr. Messer Khani and LA Dentist Group, call LA 888-95-TEETH, 888-95-TEETH, or ladentistgroup.com.
Hey, it's Jillian, and I want to tell you guys about Northwest Rugs and Furniture. Did you know they've been locally owned for 24 years? They've got the largest selection of rugs on the West Coast, and they pride themselves on having quality rugs and furniture at affordable prices. I should know, I bought a rug about 10 years ago that I still have in my dining room. Northwest Rugs and Furniture has a diverse selection of dining room, bedroom, and living room furniture. There's a huge sale going on right now with 25% off and lowest prices of the season on rugs. Make sure to visit their new store in Sherman Oaks and visit NWRugs.com.
Today's economy forced Dr. Kim to make a decision about his money.
In a savings account, you're not making any money at all. I have some money in stocks and mutual funds, and I don't trust the market.
His prescription? Real estate. The problem?
I can't do it on my own. I just didn't really know how to make it happen. And that's when a friend introduced me to Home Union.
Home Union makes it as easy as buying stocks with their end-to-end real estate solution.
You could figure all these things out on your own, or you could leverage the power of a team to do all this for you.
The concept is simple. You invest, they do the rest. Home Union does it all. But what about market stability?
I mean, it doesn't really matter to me whether the market goes up or down. I'm still going to be getting cash flow from these investment properties.
They'll even help you sell when you're ready. Use your IRA with no tax penalties. Call now for a free consultation. 800-727-3516. Follow Dr. Kim's lead.
I'm going to build my own personal empire, one house at a time. Yeah. Go to Home Union, definitely.
800-727-3516. 800-727-3516.
My name is Dale Pazinski, and this is how I live United. I volunteer with United Way, helping the homeless in my community by teaching computer skills and helping them build a basic resume to save on their very own USB drive. It's huge when somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This is Money Talk.
Tom Baker sitting in for Bob Brinker with Terry Connolly, the former head of the UC. Golden Gate University School of Business. And let's take a call from Gary in Chicago. Gary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Terry. Hey, I'm 65. I'm on Medicare. I've deferred Social Security and hoping to continue to defer it. I was hit with a increase in my Medicare premium because I'm not taking Social Security. And I'd like your take on how that impacts my annual increase in Social Security benefits, the impact on decreasing it in effect.
Well, the Medicare premium, or your Medicare premiums are driven by your reported taxable income in the prior years, whether joint or individual,
correct,
rather than your Social Security status. Social Security can relate to it in the sense that if your Medicare premiums go up, on the main part, they can be deducted from your Social Security payments as they're made to you. So that would have an impact on what you're receiving in terms of Social Security. But the main driver of your Medicare premiums is your income.
Okay. We'll move on now. We are going to talk to Jim in Fairbanks, Alaska. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Fire away.
Oh, real good. Yesterday, my wife and I were looking over our accounts, which we normally do on the weekends, and she asked me to do a little research on the Fidelity Government Cash Reserve account, which she's been in for a couple of months. Well, I looked at my charts, and lo and behold, every cash reserve account I had been converted to Fidelity Government Cash Reserve accounts. So I decided to do a little research on this, and I discovered that Fidelity is converting virtually all of their cash reserve accounts to this thing called Fidelity Government Cash Reserves. It's about $412 billion, if not a little more. And in doing a little more research on this, I noticed the SEC is allowing mutual fund companies like Fidelity to start charging fees for having these accounts. And that's for having a cash reserve account. You will be charged for having that account. Also, there's a thing called gates, G-A-T-E-S. The gates are, in case of a national emergency or some meltdown like we had in 2008, which I still think was false, that they would be able to not allow you to take your money out. They could stop you from withdrawing your funds from their accounts.
Okay, Jim, now what I have to do is I have to cut you there because we got to get an answer from Terry before we run up against the clock. So, Terry, go ahead.
Real quickly, this is the same issue as before we talked about Vanguard, and it's a trade-off the SEC laid out to be sure that these funds do not collapse the next time we have a problem because they were overinvested in corporate paper of long duration and they couldn't pay out funds. So the trade-off was companies can't speculate with these monies anymore in anything mostly other than government paper, and in exchange for that, they've allowed them to impose fees to take care of their expenses. In the past, they were taking care of their expenses by taking riskier bets with money market funds. In other words, they were investing in things with higher rates of return that would pay the fees. So the Fidelities and the Vanguards of this world said, you got to let us collect a fee in order for us to keep these funds afloat and serve their purpose. So you are caught in that. But as a result of all of it, you can sleep at night better knowing that that money at least is going to come back to you dollar for dollar if you have a problem.
Terry, thank you so much for your time. Terry Connolly, the former dean of the Golden Gate University School of Business, thank you for being here. We'll have you on again.
Delighted.
Okay, my name's Tom Baker. In hour three, we're going to talk energy and we're going to talk airlines, and we've got one really good guy to talk to about that, a guy from the University of California at Berkeley, Severin Bornstein, an economist who is renowned worldwide for his knowledge of these two subjects, and they're important because they both have huge impact on the economy. My name is Tom Baker, sitting in for Bob Brinker, who has taken the day off. He'll be back next week and many weeks after that. And once in a while, I'll come in and sit in for him and we'll talk these bigger picture things. So we'll be back in the next hour. My name is Tom Baker, and this is Bob Brinker's Money Talk.